Okay, welcome, great people, to July 8th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. For the next 5 minutes, I will talk about America, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But let's kick the show off as we normally do with the Pledge of Allegiance. Everyone stand up. Let's face the flag if you have one. Put our right hand over our hearts and begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Good stuff. Now on to today's program.
I'll talk about the first reading of the Declaration of Independence, the Jumbotron debuts at Dodger Stadium, Roswell incident launches a UFO conspiracy, and we'll wish a happy birthday to D.E. Herrick, the father of the legendary Jackalope.
Alright, so now let's get started.
1871. The first public reading of the Declaration of Independence. The Declaration was printed by local Philly printer John Dunlap. Copies were made and sent to all 13 states by horseback. German newspaper
Pennsylvanischer Staatsbote
was the first newspaper to announce the news. The Philadelphia Evening Post was the first newspaper to print the entire text of the Declaration of Independence. On July 8th, it was publicly read by Colonel John Nixon of the Philadelphia Committee of Safety. It was publicly read elsewhere in Trenton, New Jersey, Easton, PA, New York City, Princeton, etc., etc., etc. According to gurucole.american.edu, in Baltimore, on July 29th, the town was illuminated and the effigy of the late king was carted through the town and committed to the flames amidst the acclamations of many hundreds, the just reward of a tyrant.
1980, Jumbotron debuts in America at Dodger Stadium. That's right, Ken Griffey Sr. wasn't the only MVP at the 1980 MLB All-Star Game. Mitsubishi created a 20 by 28 foot television screen, at the time known as the Diamond Vision. You can call it Jumbotron, Gigatron, Megatron, or Jumbovision, whichever you prefer. Not exactly the ABC LED screens in Times Square, but at the time, it was the world's largest television set. It didn't use LEDs, it used modules of cathode ray tubes. Now, I've heard the purpose of the Jumbotron initially was to show replays to the audience so they could see a close-up like at home. But Major League Baseball decided not to do that because it was feared that if an umpire made a really, really bad call, there would be a riot. As if we're talking about a soccer match in Nicaragua. Come on, folks, lighten up. It's a game. Now, in addition to instant replays, they come in very handy at concerts or other spectator events. They advertise products. And most importantly, the Kiss Cam. Little is known about the origins of the Kiss Cam other than it probably started in California during the early 80s, but you saw that one coming, right? Now, the only thing the Kiss Cam does is focus on a guy and a girl sitting next to each other in the stands. You know the drill. The crowd cheers on the couple, and if they kiss, they get more cheers. If not, they get booed. Once in Brazil during the Olympics, President Barack Obama and First Lady Michelle wound up on the Jumbotron, and when he turned his head to kiss her, she did not reciprocate. Michelle, come on. It's your husband for crying out loud. Now, in general, the two people can be anyone. It could be a brother or sister, weird, an actual couple, or two strangers who just happen to have tickets next to each other. Yes, strangers have kissed under pressure of the Kiss Cam. It's like the whole world's watching you, so you better start smooching. To really make it interesting, stadium staff will often pose as a fan in the crowd that rejects the kiss or marriage proposal. It's hilarious and it's always a crowd favorite. In 2000, when two women kissed, Danielle Goldie and Meredith Cott, they were escorted by police out of the stadium. In California, no less. Of course, this was back in 2000. Since then, the issue of same-sex couples kissing on the cam have been heated. In August 2011, during a Giants-Cubs game, two men wound up on the kiss cam, hugging warmly. 2 years later, the Dodgers held their first LGBT night at the park, featuring the gay men's chorus of Los Angeles singing the national anthem, and in the stands, cheering on her Dodgers, Danielle Goldie, finally able to be herself in public. Roswell incident launches UFO controversy. That's because the headlines in the Roswell Daily Record read, RAAF captures flying saucer on ranch in Roswell region. Yes, the Air Force came out and said it was a weather balloon, but the locals who saw the debris knew better. No wonder. This debris that they did find on the farmer's ranch was ultra-lightweight and super-strong metal fiber optic cables and fireproof fabrics. Now, these days, of course, you see that material in all sorts of applications, but at the time, few people had seen this material. The debris was picked up and hauled off by the Roswell Army. After the weather balloon story came out, the entire story fizzled until the late 1970s. Nuclear physicist Stanton Freeman interviewed Jesse Marcel, who accompanied those armored trucks that hauled off the debris. He said it was unlike anything he'd ever seen. Then throughout the 80s, more books and documentation came out from locals interviewed, making the Roswell incident the biggest little green man from outer space a government cover-up. In fact, Project Mogul, a top-secret mission during 1947, was to put microphones and balloons in the high altitudes of Earth. You see, much like underwater, sound waves can travel for thousands of miles in the upper atmosphere. So the idea was to listen to interference from little green men. The United States, of course, was doing everything that it could at the time to gain the upper hand in the nuclear space race with the Soviet Union. When the Army showed up on this day in 1947, in all probability, they were grateful it wasn't a technology produced by the Soviets. But there are still many who believe that they were little green men and that this was a cover-up. This is why every year, the town of Roswell has a four-day alien landing festival, complete with lectures, exhibits, galleries, and conspiracies that range from interesting and somewhat plausible to sheer madness, and a good time that's truly out of this world. Actually, it's funny, I go to Roswell whenever I can, but that's because I go to see my in-laws that live there. It has nothing to do with the event. I'm sure it's a blast, don't get me wrong. Maybe, just maybe, instead of going to my next family reunion in Roswell, I'll duck into the festival and join the best alien costume contest. See, because I can get into this. I can totally buy this whole alien thing because of one reason. I know for a fact that if I lived on another planet, I too would travel galaxies for that delicious Hatch chili. Or does Roswell have the better chili? That's a conversation for another time. Happy birthday, Douglas Eugene Herrick, father of the jackalope. Well, his DNA isn't actually traced to the jackrabbit antelope inbred, but that's how Mr. Herrick is known. However, sightings of antlered rabbits go back to Germany and Sweden since the 16th century. John Coulter, the first white settler in present-day Wyoming, supposedly sighted the first jackalope, and according to legend, this killer rabbit with deer antlers could imitate human voices. Well, at least what the cowboys who sang songs around the campfire at night claimed, that they heard jackalopes singing along. Or maybe it was just the echo from a nearby canyon. Who knows? Now, I'm not going to walk into a saloon in Casper, order some whiskey, and start spouting off whether I think the jackalope is real or not. For the same reason, I'm not going to knock over that row of Harley Davidsons parked outside like dominoes. It's just a bad idea. But, supposedly, this whole jackalope nonsense just started one day when Douglas Herrick came back from hunting with his brother Ralph and tossed a dead jackrabbit in front of a pair of deer horns. And brother Ralph made the quote that made this legendary. And the quote is, you ready for this? It looks like a rabbit with horns on it. Unquote. In the 1940s, the town of Douglas achieved national status as Jackalope Capital of the World, and these days, in June, the town celebrates Jackalope Day with mini monster truck obstacle races, the Greased Pig Run, and you can even get a jackalope hunting license issued by the Douglas Chamber of Commerce. As long as you have an IQ of 72 or less, true story, and hours are restricted to midnight and 2 a.m. on June 31st. No, I don't know if they're nocturnal. In case you want to get a closer look, there's an 8-foot concrete jackalope in the center of downtown Douglas.
And so that's it, my friends, for July 8th on Joe's Daily U.S. History Lesson. Once again, I am your host, Joseph DeCristoforo. Take a look at the website, joesdailyushistorylesson.com. Let me know what you thought about today's program. What about the Declaration of Independence? Are you burned out on that yet? I know I've only brought it up about 4 times in the last 10 days.
Have you ever been at a sporting event and all of a sudden your mug shows up on a Jumbotron? Or what about a good UFO story? If you have one, I'd love to hear it. Have you ever seen a jackalope or something that looked just like it?
So yeah, let me know what you think. Be sure to check out tomorrow's program. Well, it's Teresa's birthday, and she tolerates me doing this show for long, extended periods of time. So thank you for that, Teresa. Why? Because she loves me so much, just like I love her. Also on tomorrow's program, I'll talk about Ike and Khrushchev, the DC motor, the sewing machine, Gillette, and the donut hole. So don't miss that. In the meantime, you can also catch me on Facebook and Twitter. My Twitter handle is JDUSHL. So until tomorrow, everyone, thanks for being great patriotic Americans, and thank you for listening.